Hello and welcome to The Blockchain and Us, where pioneers and thought leaders talk about their journey in blockchain technology, crypto assets, and the token economy. And I'm your host, Manuel Staggers. If you enjoy this podcast, please give it a top rating and review on iTunes, and feel free to follow me on Twitter at Manuel Staggers. This episode is brought to you by Crypto Storage. Crypto Storage offers a proprietary solution to enable professional storage of crypto assets. The storage is secure both physically and digitally on the highest grade hardware security modules with detailed configuration possibilities for individual-based access control. To learn more, visit www.cryptostorage.ch. My guest today is Thomas Nägele. Thomas is the president of the Crypto Country Association in Liechtenstein, and he is an attorney and legal advisor running a law firm with a special focus on internet, IT law, civil and corporate law, and blockchain technology. Thomas advises international finance, technology, and industrial enterprises, as well as public institutions. He is also a software developer and a lecturer in IT law at the University of Liechtenstein. And now, to the interview. Hi, Thomas, and thanks a lot for taking time today.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about one of our favorite topics here in Liechtenstein as well.
The Prime Minister of Liechtenstein, Adrian Hasler, recently announced a blockchain act to put the country on the map as a global hotspot for crypto and blockchain companies. So what exactly is the goal of these plans?
Actually, the goal of these plans is, besides making the jurisdiction more attractive for these businesses, I think another, or the main purpose of this law is to get a legal framework where not only the startups in that area have a play field where they can develop their ideas, but on the other hand, have legal certainty when it comes to their business ideas. And that's the main goal, or one of the main goals of this blockchain act, to get legal certainty to the project itself.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in Switzerland, we also often heard that, right, as kind of a USP for the country, where the regulator said, well, you know, we want to give legal certainty to ICOs and other companies in the field. So what exactly is necessary to provide legal certainty?
I think it's one approach, and that's approach we had from the beginning, is that you get in contact with the regulator and analyze the existing legal framework and see what provisions you have to follow. And that's what happens until now, that we analyze what's necessary today. And this is only possible if you have a connection to the regulator in that way that you are able to present your business model, and they will analyze that as well and tell you if this falls under any license requirements at the moment. That's one way. But if you have a look at, I mean, it's not possible to scale that in a way where you're able to deal with hopefully the demand in the future. It's possible today. Mm-hmm. That's not a problem. But in the future, if you have a lot more business cases, it's not possible to approach with every case the Financial Market Authority in Liechtenstein. Therefore, you have to have a legal framework where you know what you have to do, which other requirements you have to fulfill, so you can give all of the advisors, attorneys in Liechtenstein can, based on that law, help their clients to make a legally compliant business in Liechtenstein. So it's really necessary that you have an act where you know what you have to do and which guidance you have to follow, which provisions you have to comply with.
Since the announcement of the Blockchain Act, what has happened so far?
I mean, we got a lot more attraction globally. After the announcement, our Prime Minister was interviewed by bigger media companies in that area to give interviews. And when you travel around globally on conferences, and you just hear Liechtenstein more and more. Mm-hmm. Besides, I think it was like half a year ago, we were not mentioned besides Switzerland and other crypto-friendly jurisdictions. And this changed, at least that's my like what I experience if I go to conferences is that Liechtenstein is now one of the crypto-friendly jurisdictions, and they are well aware of that.
I mean, I also read in an article about this blockchain act that one of the goals is that many companies will prefer Liechtenstein over Malta, Gibraltar, Singapore, Bermuda, and Cayman. So how exactly will that happen?
The question is, if, like our prime minister said, that it's not only regulating ICOs or part of this area. The idea is that, or with this new blockchain act, the idea is that you regulate the basis which is needed for a token economy. Mm-hmm. So, and it's not only regulating a part of it, it's a very comprehensive legal framework for developing a lot of other business cases, not only regulating like the funding part of it, the ICO part of it, or the TG part of it. And I think this gives legal certainty if you have a project and you aim for a jurisdiction which thinks about legal problems which arise out of that in the future. And it's not only sufficient if you have regulation for the funding part of it. You have to have, for example, if you want to bring the company shares on the blockchain, you need a legal framework which allows you to do that.
That's one thing, right? I mean, the company shares that you just mentioned. I mean, also, I read in an article that the intention is to take a much wider approach, right, than the legislation of other countries to create the basis for an entire token economy. So does the government also have a rollout plan for how such a token economy could be introduced?
I am not aware of such a plan, and I think it's not publicly announced. So if they do have a plan, I'm just not knowing. But in the end, they at the presentation of the Blockchain Act, they talked about this token economy. And they also invited other lawmakers to have a look at their draft on their Blockchain Act. So I think it's, I think our government thinks that it's needed that other jurisdictions have like somehow the same rules or solve the same problems in their jurisdiction. Because in the end, it's nice when you have like an act in Liechtenstein, but it is a problem which has to be solved globally. But this is maybe it's good to have a look at that to get some ideas what is needed.
Are you also involved in the legislation?
Yes, we were. Me personally, I was from the beginning in the work group with the government evaluating if a regulation is needed and which kind of regulation might be good. And we were also, myself with my law firm was involved with the government in writing the draft of the Blockchain Act.
How did this idea to have such a blockchain legislation? How did this idea come about?
The Prime Minister approached us 1.5 years ago, I think, to evaluate if a blockchain act or which regulation would be good. So he initiated this work group with other players from the financial center in Liechtenstein, with fiduciary, with the Financial Market Authority, and some other members of that area. And so we sat together and discussed. Actually, meanwhile, we were having these projects in Liechtenstein, what would be nice and necessary in Liechtenstein to be regulated. And so this all started 1.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. What is the blockchain scene, or the startup scene in the whole crypto space? What is that like in Liechtenstein currently?
Currently, it's getting bigger and bigger, and we get more attendees to the meetups. We get some Different versions of meetups. We have a blockchain crypto world party end of this month in the Technopark in Liechtenstein. So it's growing and growing. I mean, for example, we have our law office in the House of Blockchain, which is a co-working space. We do that together with the Eternity Anstalt in Liechtenstein, you might be familiar with from Jan Islav Malahov. And there we give them like not only a home, the project, but also make it possible for them to discuss their ideas and maybe to discuss some problems they face currently, and to do that, let's say, not only due daytimes, but have a barbecue in the evening, and like to give this whole topic a home in Liechtenstein as well. But there are a lot of others and other ideas around, and it's developing very, very fast at the moment. So I think the scene is getting bigger and bigger, and it's developing rather fast at the moment.
Mm-hmm. About how many companies are there currently active in this space?
The problem is that there are no official numbers. And the thing is that we, if you look at the register, it's quite hard to find it out because not all of them are called crypto whatever. But I mean, if you look at the numbers the Financial Market Authority published, they said they had about 80 requests last year. And now they had about 100 or something this year already. So I don't know how many are founded, but it's just not possible to give you that number. Based on our client side, I'm pretty sure that it's above 100 at the moment, but I don't know.
Liechtenstein is in a similar boat, I think, like Switzerland, right? I mean, it has a banking tradition, it had some favorable laws, and now there's this chance to reinvent, you know, maybe some of this framework to become more current, right? Was it one person who had this idea, or you know, was it a group, or was it maybe even, you know, the monarchy who read somewhere about it? I mean, I'm just curious where that comes from, you know, how this momentum generated.
No, I think the momentum was pretty clear. I mean, the prime minister asked I was at the conference and I was asked by the government if I want to be part of that work group. And so they had, because what happened before is that we approached them with some projects. We went to the government and discussed just like the idea of having them in Liechtenstein and having them founded in Liechtenstein and do their business in Liechtenstein.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it seems like it's a very progressive government in Liechtenstein, because I also spoke with Mauro Casellini from Bank Frick a few weeks ago, and he said he didn't have to do much convincing work in the bank, you know, to focus more on blockchain and crypto. It was almost natural, and so maybe it's the same case with the government.
Yeah, that's a good thing in Liechtenstein, that you can talk directly to the prime minister if you have an idea. And they also invite the startup, all of the startups, to present new ideas to them, and they can check if an amendment of a law is needed or if they have to do something else to help these startups. And they are very open to new ideas. So actually it was very forward-looking from the government to see that that there will be a demand, not only for a regulation itself. And I mean, this was an ongoing process. First of all, they decided, yeah, okay, we have to have a closer look at that. There's something coming. And this was in the beginning. And then when we saw, okay, in the work group, okay, we don't have to only regulate the funding part of it, the ICOTG part of it. We have to regulate also or just provide the legal framework of the token economy. And that was very forward-looking, I think. And that they said, okay, that's what we think. And please, let's make a draft of the Blockchain Act, providing this legal framework.
Before, we spoke a little bit about the rollout plan for this token economy, but I'm sure when you maybe sit with the prime minister or other members of the government, do you sometimes also, you know, imagine what maybe the future looks like in 10, 15, 20 years?
for us, I mean, that's for me personally. For me personally, it's pretty clear that this technology will have a very big influence and impact on the financial intermediaries. So therefore, it will change a lot. And I think if you analyze that technology and the possibilities out of that technology, hopefully it will be possible for us to play a role in that area, and therefore that our financial center not has like less business, rather than like, I think me personally, if we do that right, I think it will give us a lot more work in Liechtenstein. And the thing is, hopefully this technology will allow us to not to do like very, very boring tasks. Let do technology do the boring task, and us focus on the task where you have to be like clever, or where you have to have bright people working on that. I mean, it's not. It hopefully it will not be necessary to use a lot of like financial intermediaries for simple tasks, which is now. I mean, and technology will provide solutions for that.
You mentioned somewhat of a vision that you have, right? For maybe a new kind of economy, or maybe also for Liechtenstein as a country. What are other things that we could expect in our life in the future?
I think in 5 years, or hopefully in 5 to 10 years, I think it's not for us. It will be like using an email application, or like using the browser. You don't think about, okay, I use a browser now because I want to enter the thing called internet, or because I want to write an email. Like, this is the new kind of messaging system, which is somehow connected via cables to other computers and whatsoever. And I think like at the moment, if you start in that area, and for example, if you want to buy your first cryptocurrency, mm-hmm. it's quite a task. I mean, you have to know what to do. A lot of people will tell you a lot of strange stories about it. They will tell you that you have to be very careful, which you have to be, sure. But it's a step. You have to be like, it will take some time until you have like confidentiality, okay, that the system works in this or that way. And I think, and I hope, that in 5 to 10 years, we can trust these technologies, and like the broader mass of people will trust, and will for a good reason trust this technology and use it on a daily basis. And I hope and I think that this is going to happen, that people will not fully understand everything, because today I think the minority of people understand how the internet works, mm-hmm. but everyone is using it. And I hope that, like, because you do still have a lot of people which tell you that this is the biggest scam ever, and this technology is not future proof because there will be quantum computers and whatsoever. And I hope that we will have the certainty in 5 to 10 years that we use that as we use other technology, and it's not like a meaning of I believe in this and that. It's not a question of belief. It's just because we do that on a daily basis, we can trust it. It's working, and we have good experience with it.
Mm-hmm. Do you already see some signs of this happening currently?
I mean, I think that everybody can see signs, because in the end, if you, for example, every of my employee gets a wallet, a hardware wallet. So everybody who's starting in my law firm gets a hardware wallet. And then I transfer them some minor values. And they start to play with it. And they see, it's very volatile. You know, I lost this and that, or I gained this and that, you know. And they start to discuss under each other, and they share ideas, and they say, you see, there's this new currency, and they do this and that, or, yeah, you know, it was very easy to transfer this, or like now I have to do an update and whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And this is like with everybody I talk, and with everybody when I tell them the basic idea behind the technology and let's say at the moment it's DLT and blockchain. And if they understand it, they say, yeah, that makes sense. You know, mm-hmm. Okay, now I understand what's the idea behind it. And then they change. Then they have like, okay, I have understood the basics of it, and I can decide then if I want to use it or not. Sure, I have people which, after all, they say, no, I will never do that. I will never put 10 Swiss francs on such a device because I totally don't trust it, you know. But this is the minority. If you have a look at the people who understood the basic concept of it, the majority is they trust the technology afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I think, so these are the signs.
That's actually cool. I mean, so you, that's sort of an education almost that you perform when with your employees. I mean, this is the reason. It's not that you're paying salaries or something in cryptocurrencies, right?
No, I don't pay salaries in cryptocurrencies. I mean, if an employee is asking me that, we can talk about that. That's no problem. But I mean, I do accept to pay my bills in cryptocurrencies. That's possible. Like cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ether, not with tokens, but with cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, you can pay my bill. But since a long time ago, I think it was beginning of 17, I accepted crypto as payment.
Mm-hmm. How many people pay in crypto? Just curious.
Yeah, let's say at least 20-30%. Let's say 20%. Yeah.
Okay. Well, but that also maybe has to do with the fact that most of your clients are crypto companies, right?
Yes, about 80% are crypto companies. So.
Okay, cool. Interesting. How did you originally get into Bitcoin and blockchain?
Actually, because I used to code software for about 10 years, and I was always interested in IT, and it was about 11 when I got first heard of Bitcoin. So I realized that there's this cool software called Bitcoin back then. And I was desperately trying to get some of these Bitcoins and downloaded the software. And that was like my first touch to Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Then I started my lawyer career.
Sorry to interrupt, but how did you learn about Bitcoin? I mean, you said you saw this somewhere, but did somebody tell you about it? Or was it a group somewhere at university or at your work?
So I don't know exactly where my first contact was, but I do remember that it was in 11 because I started there with my first, the first time I downloaded the software and used it. Mm-hmm. And in 2013, because I started my PhD, I was on the search of a topic. And then I realized, that would be a very nice topic because it's kind of it touches the financial industry a little bit, mm-hmm. which in Liechtenstein is very, very good if you write a PhD in that area. So everybody's telling you write a PhD about foundations and trust and whatever. Mm. And on the other hand, it has a very big technological part of it. So you have to understand both worlds. And I thought that might be a very good idea. I approached my former boss and asked him, I want to do my PhD about Bitcoin. He said, what? And I said, the cryptocurrency. He said, what? No, please don't do that. And I wanted to do me a favor and told me, Thomas, please write about something of purpose, like foundations or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, something you need for your future.
Yes. Something yeah, real. Yeah. Get a real job.
and he was wrong. And
what did you end up writing the thesis about?
Actually, I didn't finish until now, but now I'm close because the good thing is that I work on a daily basis now in that field. So it was easy for me just to do all of the research to do my PhD. So my title at the moment is Token under Liechtenstein Law and like the legal nature of a token. And that's actually everybody is talking about token, but if you have a close look what a token really is and which type of token are existing at the moment, mm-hmm. it's very hard to find a proper legal definition of a token. And that's actually the content of my PhD at the moment. And hopefully I will end it soon. But yeah, we with all of these developments, I said, let's start with doing the practical part of it and maybe later we can write the PhD about it.
I mean, since you're an expert in this field, I'm just wondering, I had an argument recently with somebody whether Bitcoins are data or not.
That's exactly the question. If you look at transactions and what your Bitcoins are, that's like the result of a calculation.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, the result of a calculation then is stored for a certain period of time somewhere. So, and this storing of the result of the calculation, that's data.
So meaning the record of ownership and transfer, that is the data, but the individual token is not data?
For example, if you look at when you, for example, use Ethereum,
mm-hmm.
and there you write a token, sure, then you have the code which defines the token.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have to differentiate between these and the units you get on the Bitcoin blockchain. I think this is a different type.
Mm-hmm. So, but Bitcoins are data or not?
You know, if Bitcoins are not stored as data, mm-hmm. so the amount of what is connected to your address is a calculation. And therefore, it is data, but just for a very short period on not on the Bitcoin blockchain, but where you do the calculation.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is data, then the whole Bitcoin blockchain is the data of your Bitcoin.
Okay. What is a Bitcoin if not data?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. And that's what I told you. The thing is that it's the result of a calculation, and therefore it's always data in that respect, you know. But people think that Bitcoin is a number or is a store of record somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not the case. It's not that it's data in the meaning of it's stored that Thomas has X Bitcoin somewhere, and if you want to know how many Bitcoin I have, I just have a look at that record, and then it will say, aha, Thomas has this amount of Bitcoin. And that's not the case. So sure, in the end, it's true that Bitcoin is data in a way that it is calculated. In the end, you know, okay, I have this amount of is linked to that address. That's data in that moment. But it's not. People think that it's like a way, like a record which is existing and perpetual in the blockchain itself. And this is not the case, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I wanted to ask a few more things. First, about being a lawyer, and then maybe we can go back again to the blockchain law. You said you were for 10 years a software developer, right? And I mean, clearly you have a deep understanding of software in the crypto field. But how did you decide to become a lawyer?
Actually, I mean, I didn't do that full time. I was not a software developer full time. But whenever I, it was my hobby, and whenever I thought, okay, there's a problem and there's no proper solution to it, and I thought I can solve that with a piece of software, I did that. So I did develop a time and attendance software. I did develop a video over IP software to surveillance a parking lot and these kind of software. And I mean, it started with very small things and then got bigger. But so this was because I was always interested in IT, and I grew up with IT, and I always had the idea. I mean, I never was educated in IT. I was self-teaching myself from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a lot of time with like solving problems in that area. And that was like always my hobby, and I liked it a lot. But sooner or later, I started as an entrepreneur. And one of my first things that was a joint venture about biometric fingerprint readers. Mm-hmm. And I thought that like the perfect basement for being an entrepreneur is like to study law. And I sooner or later I realized that the combination of IT and law is rather good if you look in the future. And I thought that this is like the area where I want to spend most of my time. Because still now, I mean, I do some of the IT by myself, and it's a lot of fun to have a look at codes and to discuss something. But my work as a lawyer is now very time intensive, so I don't have time to code. That's just at the moment, that's just not possible. And when I finished my studies in 11, I went to the court to do the internship there. And then I thought, okay, this is so interesting that every day you have a different topic and it's very challenging to understand all of these topics. And I thought, like, this is the path where I want to go. So, I mean, and I hoped that I don't have to turn my back on IT, because my vision was to combine these two areas, to combine IT and law. And even the law, I mean, or being a lawyer is a very competitive field. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you have to be very good at what you do. And this is the niche. I mean, I do understand IT and law, and it turned out recently that it was a good decision to focus on that. And it's very good field. It makes a lot of fun recently.
Mm-hmm. How in Liechtenstein, do you have a lot of competing law firms in this field?
In this field, it's getting, and don't get me wrong, better. So we have more competitors, because in the end, if you have a jurisdiction and you're the only law firm offering services in that area, sooner or later, you will have problems, because you will not be able to deal with all of the demand. And so if a lot of startups will not be able to found their company in Liechtenstein because the lack of service providers, mm-hmm. they will go somewhere else. So it doesn't make any sense to think in a competitive way. I did the complete other way around. I tried to convince all of my colleagues and competitors to start in that area. I even helped them out with templates, you know, to say, please start in that area, because there will be so much demand. That's my vision. And that's just my point of view. There will be so much demand that all of us have enough work, you know. And that's actually the same with Switzerland. So I don't think that there's a competition between Switzerland and Liechtenstein. I mean, I hope that we find a way, and the signs are going into that direction, that we can work together I think, because our competition is not Europe. Our competition is United States and Asia. So I think we should work together, and both jurisdictions, for example, Liechtenstein and Switzerland, both of them have advantages and disadvantages. But together, you can provide, in some cases, you can provide much better solutions if you, for example, have a part of the business in Liechtenstein and another part in Switzerland. So for me, I don't think that it's time to have a competitive view on that industry. I think, sure, in the end, you know, there's always competition and you have to be prepared for that. But at the moment, there's a lot more demand than people entering that market.
Let's take a quick break for a message from our sponsors. Crypto Storage is part of the Crypto Finance Group, providing services for professional financial intermediaries and therefore bridging the gap between traditional markets and blockchain technology. The storage solution offered by Crypto Storage raises market standards by introducing a new security paradigm, which features two layers of dedicated and redundant hardware devices. This setup allows for a dedicated, independent, and highly flexible multi-signature framework. All transactions can be independently reviewed and approved on a dedicated tamper-proof hardware.
the hardware security module, the tamper-proof signing devices, and the tailored software solution are all developed by leading Swiss providers with vast experience in finance and IT security. To learn more, visit www.cryptostorage.ch.
There's a lot more demand than people entering that market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on there. Because, I mean, how many people live in Liechtenstein? I think it's about the size of Monaco or something like this, right?
Yeah, 37,000.
37,000, yeah. I mean, because in Switzerland already, you know, with 8 million, the issue is always how to get international talent into the country, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, how easy or how difficult is that in Liechtenstein?
Actually, it's more complicated in some cases as it is in Switzerland. So it's the easiest part, if you look at that area where Liechtenstein is Austria. It's much easier to get a permission in Austria than in Liechtenstein or Switzerland. But the problem in Austria, is that you pay, in comparison, more tax. And for some of the talents, this is a question they ask a lot, that they, which is the taxes they have to pay. And especially if they think about going to Liechtenstein, and then you have to tell them, yes, it's good if you want to come to Liechtenstein, but we are not able to give you the residence permission in Liechtenstein, so you have to go to Switzerland and Austria. And then you combine these two jurisdictions tax-wise, mm-hmm. and none of them want to go to Austria for a certain reason. Sure. I mean,
interesting.
And that's what I meant with Switzerland as well. I mean, that's, if you want to call it that way, a disadvantage of Liechtenstein, that we have very strict rules when it comes to residence permission. So it's easier to have them in Switzerland. And we rely on that as well to get the permissions for Switzerland so they can work in Liechtenstein.
Mm-hmm. So meaning then, but what would that mean for a company from abroad that wants to start a business in Liechtenstein? Would they just incorporate the company, or maybe with you, you know, have some sort of representative and then work somewhere else in the area, or live somewhere else in the area, or how would that work?
There are two ways how you can do that. One is that you have a nominee fiduciary, for example, so you don't have to have a CEO living around or working on a daily basis in Liechtenstein. But that's not sufficient for the type of projects which we see in most cases when it comes to crypto projects. Mm-hmm. Because what they do is they do deliver products and services to people. And if they do deliver products and services for people, what they need in Liechtenstein is a trade license at the moment. And so they have to apply for a trade license. And a trade license, one of the requirements is that you live in a distance of 1 hour. So it's good if you live in Zug or in Zurich. Even Zurich is good. But you cannot live in London and being holder of the trade license in Liechtenstein. So that's a challenge we have in some projects. But what happens is that in most cases, they have one CEO really working here on a daily basis. And that's why we have the co-working spaces. And that's why the whole ecosystem is developing, because we have to have at least part of the people here.
Mm-hmm. And that CEO, would that have to be a local person, or?
No, that's not needed. It can be from wherever he wants. I mean, for certain circumstances, you can apply for a permission or an exemption, but the rules are very strict there. So in most cases, what we do is that we settle them in Switzerland or in Austria.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But interesting. The CEO, if the project is big enough, you know. Mm-hmm. That might be possible.
Mm-hmm. It's that whole area, you know, with the permits and the people actually living and working in Liechtenstein. Is that also part of this blockchain act?
I'm only allowed to tell or to talk about the things which were already published. And I think there's none of these questions is answered in the presentation or what we talked. I'm sad, but I cannot answer you that question.
Yes, sure. Because always I think when we talk about legal certainty, we mean those obvious things about the technology. But, you know, to actually run a business and to start a company, there's so many other moving parts necessary to build this ecosystem that I think Liechtenstein wants to build.
I think that our Prime Minister answered that question in his speech where he had at the conference where he announced the Blockchain Act. Mm-hmm. I don't remember it word by word, but he said something like, if we ask our entrepreneurs to be forward-looking and to develop new ideas, we have to, at least as a government, we should give them the framework to do so. So I hope that our government is going in that direction, that they support our support the development and to make the needed amendments to our law if there are any needed amendments. So I think he said something like, if it is expected for entrepreneurs to be innovative and adapting to change, entrepreneurs may expect the same of a country or something. So I'm very confident when it comes to that respect as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. In what language is the law in Liechtenstein? I mean, is it German?
Yeah, all of the laws are in German in Liechtenstein. But I was told that it will be translated in English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's one of the main things. I mean, I spoke recently to people in England and they said, yeah, you know, one issue with Switzerland is that we cannot read the law.
Mm. Yeah, sure. I mean, we do have some of our laws already in English, but not all of our laws are in English. But at least when it comes to the Blockchain Act, I think that I heard that it will be translated to English as well.
Mm-hmm. And the court system and all that, I mean, can, let's say, an English native, let's say the CEO of a company would be an English speaker, can they, how would they interact, you know, with the legal system on a daily basis or the regulatory system in Liechtenstein?
I mean, that's actually, from a practical perspective, that's not an issue. Because if you have like a formal proceeding, okay, and you have a judge, and most of the judges are able to speak English, and they can decide whether they want to have a translator or not. But if you have to act in front of court as a party, and then they will have a translator at the court to help you. When it comes to, for example, to the regulator, they do speak English, and their formal acts will be in German. But if you approach them, you can approach them in English as well. So, and the all of the intermediaries, and that's what I meant when I said that we have a very experienced financial center. They are used to use English in their daily correspondence and at their daily work. So all of the fiduciaries and banks and lawyers, they speak not only German but English as well. So that's like sure, and in that area, I know that everybody, I mean, is using English. That's like the language. It's not German at all.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So that's not necessarily then a deal breaker, you know, over maybe Malta or Gibraltar or Singapore, where somebody from London would say, well, at least there I can speak with people. So that's not a problem in Liechtenstein.
No, because I mean we did already have a lot of meetings with the government and the Financial Market Authority, our regulator, in English. So I never faced any problems in that direction.
Another thing is Liechtenstein is a principality, a monarchy. Do you interact with the prince at all? I mean, in your discussions when it comes to crypto, or I mean, are there any exchanges about, you know, what is the future going to look like? What is maybe?
I mean, we invited him for the opening ceremony of the House of Blockchain, and sadly he had another appointment at that evening. So we had to decide if the Prime Minister will make it to the event. So we had the Prime Minister at the opening ceremony of the House of Blockchain. But you do see the Prince as well at conferences or at events, and you can approach him directly to talk to him about things. He is the prince, and he is not the parliament or the government. So I think that's you have to differentiate between these things.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
But you can talk to him if you want to talk to him about cryptocurrencies. I don't know if he's willing to accept, but with all of other with a lot of other topics, I have the experience. That you can approach him and talk to him.
Mm-hmm. I think he gave a big interview in one of these what was it, CoinDesk or something like this. There was an interview I read. And then I approached them and they said, well, we already gave that interview, so we're currently not available for other interviews. But okay. Anyway, I'll definitely try again.
Okay.
Liechtenstein is, you said before, it has a very strong financial sector. And to me, right, I grew up in Switzerland, and Liechtenstein always was, you know, of course, it was this monarchy, this kind of fairy tale place almost, but then also the banking place, you know, lots of rich people live there. You have all these multinationals there for tax reasons. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have a little bit of, you know, maybe shady dealings going on. We don't quite know. But there was always this kind of like interesting place that is mostly focusing on finance. But for startups, for entrepreneurship, I mean, is Liechtenstein a good place for that?
I think that Liechtenstein is becoming better and better when it comes to that question. Because if you start to work with other jurisdictions, and if you have like exchange with lawyers from other jurisdictions, and if you have clients and they see how it is in Liechtenstein in comparison to other jurisdictions, I think that we have a very, very well and very good and very fast and very approachable administration. And they are very helpful when it comes to startups and to entrepreneurs. We do have a very open-minded government and regulator. So I think in the end, sure, there's always something or some minor things you have to complain about. Mm-hmm. But overall, I think we are a very, very good jurisdiction when you have like to see it from the legal perspective. On the other hand, entrepreneurs, they don't need only like a legal framework. What they also need is like proper co-working spaces or proper places where they can start their business. And recently, we had a lot of development in that area as well. So we do have Technopark Liechtenstein, which is a member of the Technopark Alliance in Switzerland. And we do have other co-working spaces in Ruppgell. We have the Komoot there. That's a very nice building as well, mm-hmm. Where you can have your company started. And we do have, sure, the House of Blockchain, and we do have other areas in that direction as well. So it's getting better and better. In the end, you know, there are always minor things which we can like amend and develop for being a much or another, like a little bit better place as well. I think what is good and the changes I just realized lately is that more and more young entrepreneurs are doing business in Liechtenstein, and they want to start their own business in Liechtenstein. And I think that's a very good development.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I mean, you mentioned before that you've been in this space since 2011, that you're constantly, you know, experimenting. I'm pretty much at the forefront. But how do you yourself, how do you keep current on what's happening, on the technology, maybe also on the challenges, on the opportunities, on all of that?
That's like a very that's a very complicated task. I mean, it's not complicated in a way, but the thing is that you have to do it on a daily basis. And if you go on holidays, for example, for a week, and you get back, and yes, you try to read a little bit, but you get back, you feel like you're in a different century. That's really what did I miss? You know, what happened meanwhile? And it's a task which is very time consuming. That's what I, you know, okay, I started quite early in comparison. But the thing is, I don't think that that you should call yourself a blockchain expert, even if you do that on a daily basis, you know, because in the end, everything is too new, and whatever you knew since years might not be applicable tomorrow. So it's very hard to keep up, and it's a lot of work to keep up. And what we do is like You have like that. That's part of the idea behind the House of Blockchain as well. That we have startups and they can approach us. I mean, they can come to us and have a coffee and ask us. Yeah, you know. But if I need to have another employee, do I need a residence permission? And I will answer him the question while having a coffee. But on the other hand, if I have an argument with a very nice reporter about if a Bitcoin is data or not, I can approach him and say, yeah, you know, you develop these kind of software, but what do you think? Is Bitcoin data or not? And you have to do that as well. And that's the idea behind the House of Blockchain. And sure, I do go to meetups. I do talk a lot to that project and to our clients. And I do read all of these portals, or not all of these, but I try to read at least some of them. But that's really hard.
Which ones do you read?
I don't do advertisement for papers, but I mean, yeah, the big ones you have, and I'm part of some Telegram chats as well, and yeah. I do read Twitter.
How do you go about separating out the noise, you know, or the scams, or the spam, so to speak, from the real information?
That's another quite hard task. I mean, when you have to, one part is that you don't have. I mean, in the law practice, it's crucial that you find the scams and the Ponzi schemes and stuff. You know. And there are ones which are quite easy, because they will tell you that they issue token on their MySQL database and WordPress backend. So these are the easy ones. But there are others which actually it's quite hard to tell if they are real or if they plan to do a scam. And in some cases, you're just not able to realize that. That's when it comes to the law practice. And if you analyze, or if you read all of these news as well, I mean, you have to, if you have a news, or if you have like an information, you have to double check it and see if they don't just copy paste, because then it's not of no value. If they really have a different view or opinion on some things. And in most cases, and that makes it hard. On the one hand, you have to be very fast, you have to react very fast, or to get the information fast. And on the other hand, it's only possible with time that you see what's right and wrong, because you just have to have that moment to analyze and to develop the right answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you look at the way currently the regulator and maybe also the government works, I mean, what you just described is like a total change in their operations, right? Because they will also need to stay current, and they will also need to know what's going on and you know, how the technology changes. So I'm wondering, how do you see them coping with these challenges?
I do see that our government and administration, they are more and more adapting in a way that they do read these way of information, like the ones you already mentioned. Mm-hmm. That some of them, they do also like use Twitter, so they retweet a lot of information. And for example, Patrick Bond, the head of the banking division of the Financial Market Authority, or regulator, he's tweeting currently on a daily basis about cryptocurrencies and blockchain and the development in that area. But not only, I mean, fintech and banking in general. But that's just the way I see it. That even they start to inform themselves more regularly about the developments.
There's always this saying that we overestimate what's possible in 1 year and underestimate what's possible in 10 years. So what do you think do we currently overestimate about what blockchains and cryptocurrencies can do for us?
I think in 1 year, we overestimate how we can use cryptocurrencies on a broader base for payments, so at the retail stores and everywhere. So if you want to pay on a daily basis, with cryptocurrencies, I think we are not there. For 10 years, I think we totally underestimate the impact on of these technologies, whether it's still blockchain or DLT and maybe a changed version of it. I think we totally underestimate how the token and the token economy will impact our daily work and our daily business. Because I think and I believe that there's this chance that a big portion of the trades will be done via an infrastructure based on a completely different technology and a decentralized technology rather than having a centralized version as we do at the moment. I think this is the most underestimated one. When it comes to the people in general, sure. I mean, in the blockchain space, you find a lot of people having the same idea about the future.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you'll still be a lawyer in 10 years?
I do think that a lot of law, of the work of lawyers, will be done by technology. Especially when you have a look at big data analysis and artificial intelligence. I mean, you don't have to go much further, but for example, about 30% of a lawyer's work is research. Mm-hmm. And algorithm can do research much better than every lawyer. If you have like a lot of files you have to analyze, you have to remember that still today, there are teams of lawyers locked in an office when it comes to mergers, and they just analyze every piece of paper. Hmm. And that's just incredible. And I mean, this costs a lot of money. It slows down the proceeding a lot. And this doesn't make sense. So I think, yes, sure, I hope I am a lawyer in 10 years. But I think even our work will change dramatically. So we will, at least a big part of our work will be disrupted by technology as well.
Mm-hmm. What kind of skills do you think are important in this future?
Start to understand technology, start to code, you don't have to code by yourself, but you should be open to technology and to not only using it, but understanding the main ideas behind it. And if you want to act in that area, and as a lawyer especially, I think a lot of our clients will change in a way that because their business models will be disrupted by technology. So we as advisors, we have to be able to understand technology. So I think that's crucial that you have a basic understanding of technology in the future. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Did I forget to ask anything, Thomas?
I think that one thing I should be asked more is, what do I think this technology or this development, how this is influencing the financial center in Liechtenstein, in the meaning of do we need any banks and fiduciaries in 10 years,
right?
And lawyers? Or is everything done by a technology called blockchain or whatsoever?
And what do you think?
I think that if we develop in the right direction, and if we don't do it once with a blockchain act and say, yeah, this is it, we started here. So if we continuously adapt to the developments, and if we continuously try to be ahead of the developments, or in the meaning of ahead of the developments of the framework, I think that our financial center has the possibility to have a big portion of the business in that area globally.
Good. That was really fascinating. And I learned a lot. And it was really interesting, not just to hear about Liechtenstein, but also about how you approach things and what you see in the future. So I really appreciate your taking time, and thanks a lot for coming on today on this show.
Yeah, thank you very much for your very interesting questions. I think that we will have the answer to some of the questions in 1 year, and some of our questions will be answered in 5 years. But I'm really looking very confident to the future.
Thanks so much for joining us today. More info on our guests and our sponsors is in the show notes of this episode and on the podcast website, theblockchainandus.com. To help people find this podcast, it's important that you download, subscribe, and give it a top rating and review on iTunes or on the podcast platform of your choice. I'm Manuel Staggers, and I thank you very much for listening.